This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Tonight, Governor Whitmer delivers her third State of the State address. This one, a bit different than we're used to. It'll be held away from the Capitol and with no lawmakers or other guests in attendance. Probably a fitting change for the year that we've had. And it also reflects a lot of somber news that the governor will have to deliver as she recounts the deep human and economic toll that the COVID pandemic has taken on Michigan. One of the most pressing stories of the past year has been the sheer loss of jobs, the unemployment benefit claims, and what we consider in our society to be essential services or service workers. Dustin Walsh of Cranes Detroit has been doing some reporting on the confluence of all these things, and he joins us now. Dustin, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks, April.
Okay, give it to us straight. What are the hard numbers as of this month when we look at the loss of jobs in Michigan?
Oh, well, okay. No one wants to feel good today. we lost about 480,000 jobs last year in 2020, which was remarkable. You know, it was not a good year. About a little more than 200,000 of those were in the kind of the restaurants and hospitality business, which is sort of be expected. They purged about 47% of all of their jobs. So it's not been a good year. Manufacturing lost 36,000 jobs. There hasn't been any industry that hasn't been touched really by the kind of the COVID pandemic when you cut through sort of all of the industries together. So it's not a great picture for the future, but you know, hopefully things are looking brighter.
In your reporting, you've also discussed something that might seem out of place with joblessness, and that's an increase in union membership. How do those two issues run in parallel with each other, or do they?
Right. It's sort of confounding, right? We've had this just mass loss of jobs, and yet union membership grew year to year. Union membership for the last, you know, few decades has been pretty hit or miss. It rises and goes down, but you certainly wouldn't expect with, you know, nearly 500,000 jobs lost for membership to go up. But what happened is really sort of a several fold thing here. You know, one is that it's the industries that typically are heavy union didn't lose as many jobs. Yes, manufacturing lost over 60,000 jobs combined with trade. But really, we saw a lot of those people kind of, especially in the retail, in the restaurant industries that typically are not union, those lost lots and lots of jobs. And those people all had to find work, whether it be work share programs or whatever else. And they picked up work in a lot of different areas, whether that was in food service, you know, where it was like a meatpacking industry, these places that were in high demand, or particular Meijer and Kroger. Mm. You know, we've all spent way, way more money on groceries this year than we had in the past because we're not dining out. And those are all union heavy industries, actually.
So is there any indication of how unions are feeling about this surge of sorts that's happening?
Well, they're obviously thrilled that they've picked up more members, right? A higher unionship representation is good for if you're a union. But they're not optimistic that it's a long-term growth. All those jobs were sort of filled this year. Being able to sustain that is not likely next year unless they can start organizing, right? Like start finding manufacturing plants, maybe foreign manufacturing plants that are operating in the U.S. that are not union, that they can turn union. They haven't had a lot of success with that in probably the last 15 years. So the odds of rising union membership as we go forward is probably pretty slim.
Well, what about the things that they might have been able to do for members? Have there been any increases in better wages for unions, benefits, or anything else that they might be negotiating for?
Right. So we haven't seen a lot of that yet. You know, that data is usually pretty lagged. But yes, typically if the rises in union membership typically means rises in wages, and they do have a spillover effect. So when union members make more money, typically the non-union members tend to go up, right? It's trying to kind of bridge the gap because there is a massive disparity between union jobs and non-union jobs as far as wages go. So we're sort of seeing, you know, that confluence will help. And also, you know, minimum wage is a big topic. We saw yesterday that the Biden administration and others want to make the federal minimum wage $15 an hour. That does have spillover effects. It's not a lot of people that make below that, surprisingly, but it does have spillover effects that would, possibly raise wages around other industries.
Yeah, this has been kicking around for a while now. Have the business community gotten anywhere near this subject? Has the business community started to talk about what Biden is proposing, given the financial hardships everyone is facing?
Right. I think when you're taking in this microcosm of COVID-19 or what we hope to be microcosm, you know, please end this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's it's sort of a harder take, right? Looking at what $15 minimum wage looks like. The business community has weighed in the past, prior to COVID mainly, but you know, their issue is always, it's a difficult place to be in depending on where you're at. If you look at restaurant workers, obviously they don't make $15 an hour. They make well below minimum wage. So maybe your mom and pop diners, maybe that's a good thing for those workers. But for workers that work at, you know, maybe some of the fancier higher end restaurants, going to that minimum wage and getting rid of their tips is what they always kind of suspect would happen. They view that as a negative because they make well above $15 an hour at some of these places, when you include their tips based on what people are tipping on their meals. Mm-hmm. If you go to other places, it's other economists, other people see it as maybe a potential advantage for large companies, companies like Target, Amazon, that already pay this amount of money. And now you're taking smaller companies that are trying to compete with these massive, massive companies. And now they can't, you know, now their wages are so high, it's hard for them to compete, you know, on a kind of dollar for dollar level. And then also talking about rural America, right? So it's harder to pay $15 an hour maybe in Nagani in Michigan's Upper Peninsula versus Metro Detroit. So those things all kind of weigh in. And when you do a national minimum wage, those issues all matter, especially when you're talking from state to state. You know, there's a big difference between Mississippi and Michigan. So those all the issues are there. They're obviously talking about it. But again, it's a smaller portion. It's growing a smaller portion every day. $15 an hour by 2025, which I believe was the date they put on it. There's not going to be a lot of workers left at $15 an hour at 2025, in my speculation. You know, it'll help some, but overall, it's not as big of a deal then as people kind of make it out to be.
For sure. Dustin, hey, I know you report on business, not on politics, but these two often get mixed up with each other. What will you be listening for when Governor Whitmer makes her State of the State address tonight?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, I think there's going to be a little blustering and she's going to have to do positioning on sort of the economic shutdowns and keeping things closed. And you know, she's come under attack probably correctly about sort of where the math is on this stuff, because it's hard to move beyond what's arithmetic and what's, you know, suspicion. But I think the way forward is what I'll be looking for and what businesses are going to be looking for. Like what does an economic reopening look like? Even though, again, we're mostly open, but I think restaurants, you know, can only avoid this for so long, and they're supposed to open on February 1st. Does that help schools? I mean, there's just a lot of uncertainty, and I'm not sure she's going to have the answer. The governor's going to have the answer to that. But I think people are going to be looking for optimism is another aspect that they'll be looking for. I feel like we're at this weird inflection point where people like myself are sort of bouncing between optimism and deep sadness about the future of this country and of, you know, the state and just our lives, right? Mm-hmm. So I think people would be looking for some optimism. And I think business, if you look at what's going on in business community, I think that things are getting a little more optimistic. Different organizations and different things are projecting maybe a faster turnaround than we were thinking maybe over the summer. So, you know, maybe by the end of this year, things will look a lot better than maybe, you know, in well into 2022, which were the original projections, you know, 5 months ago. So hopefully, you know, a level of optimism is going to kind of sweep around, but we'll see.
Dustin, we've talked more than once in the past about the sectors of the workforce that have been hardest hit during the pandemic. And you've noted that people of color and women have really been hit hard in terms of job loss outright, but also in terms of just all the things that are happening to squeeze the kind of sectors that people are in. And I just wondered, have you noticed any substantial changes in people's lives as you keep talking to workers and businesses about what's going on right now?
Right. I think you're sort of seeing two different avenues that are going. I think you're seeing companies, particularly larger companies, which have been getting larger every year, and more people work for these larger companies. They're doing changes. They've seen the things that people have gone through. They're seeing sort of the impact on women, particularly throughout the pandemic, having to, you know, the childcare unreasonably falling on women, et cetera, et cetera. I think you're going to see more parental leave things going into effect. I think you'll see more flexibility in the workspace. So I think there's going to be some outright benefits, particularly for women in corporate jobs. But as we know, a lot of women do not work in those jobs. A lot of women do work in the industries that have been negatively impacted by COVID-19 and the shutdowns. So it's hard to understand where that's going to be. I don't think those jobs are necessarily going to get better. Childcare will remain a massive issue in this country. It's getting more and more expensive every day because of relatively prohibitive basically we wanted to protect children. So we put in some prohibitive licensing requirements, which was great because it helped, you know, bad ones go out of business, but it also put good ones out of business. So a lot of in-home daycares are closing and a lot of big, fancy, very, very expensive daycares are opening. And daycare is going to squeeze earnings for a lot of people. And that's going to basically putting the situation on women where they're going to have to make the decision of whether they work or whether they stay home with the children. Because you got to make a lot of money to be able to afford to send your kids to daycare, particularly if you have multiple children. And so that decision has to be made, whether it's more cost effective to just stay home or to send them to daycare. Those are long-term issues that existed before COVID that are just being really highlighted. And I'm not sure they're all going to be solved, but, you know, at least people are more aware of them, you know, now.
Dustin Walsh of Cranes Detroit. Dustin, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to the day when we can come at you for some better news.
Oh, me too. Thank you.